Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. We have a study from Guangdong Medical University in China, an article published in the peer-reviewed journal Frontiers in Nutrition that shows that you can lower your risk of dying in a hospital, as well as lower death risk after 30 to 90 days among heart attack patients admitted to an intensive care unit when given vitamin B1. Vitamin B1 is called thiamine, and it's not expensive, easy to get. In fact, if you just took what they're suggesting following a heart attack, a myocardial infarction, you would lower your risk of death by 17%. And now, mind you, we have hundreds of thousands, probably this year around 700,000 Americans who have heart attacks and die. And then you have more than that who have a heart attack and survive. And then they're put on blood thinning medications and to try to save their lives. Now, of course, lifestyle modification can make a huge difference as well. But in this particular study, they took a vitamin B1 and it was given oral. And they found that had a 39.5% lower adjusted risk of in-hospital death than those who did not receive vitamin B1. And that's a big deal, because a lot of people who have a first heart attack die of a second heart attack, or sometimes within a month. And here they're taking 1 month to 3 months, and they lowered it about 37.4% over 3 months and 39.5% over the first month. Now, how much vitamin B1 do we need on a daily basis? I suggest simply taking a multiple vitamin tablet or B-complex tablet. And if you take a 25 milligram B1, B2, B6, those are your three really important B vitamins, but also folic acid, 500 to 1,000 micrograms, or 1 milligram, and B12 the same. If you take it in methylated form, it really helps your brain, your central nervous system, it helps your heart, and the same B complex is biotin, which helps your hair grow, and you have niacin in there, vitamin B3, that's your anti-aging vitamin. And then you have choline and inositol, and that can really help your moods and energy level. So just try to take a 25 milligram B complex each day, best taken on an empty stomach. Now, from Lund, L-U-N-D, University in Sweden, comes a study about if you consume berries, it can improve cognitive function, metabolic function, and alters your gut function. In the gut, you have bacteria, trillions of bacteria. Now, if you're the average American, you don't have good bacteria. You have bad bacteria because the diet's bad. Clean diet, clean bacteria. A normal diet, normal for most Americans, is a lot of processed food, lots of meat. And that gives you bad bacteria. So then there's a battle in your intestine, what they call the microbiota, B-I-O-T-A, or the microbiome, but it's simply bacteria. And we know that when you have certain fermented foods, like the Japanese, the Chinese, the Koreans, you have better bacteria. When you have fermented foods in the United States, like sauerkraut, you have better bacteria, good bacteria. Miso, good bacteria. Yogurt, good bacteria. But the best way of getting your bacteria so it's consistent is simply to take a bacterial tablet or capsule. They can range from millions to billions. And quite simply, the more problems you have, the more I would recommend, even twice a day. But what they're saying, and this goes back to the berry part of this, is that your diet definitely influences your overall well-being. And there's lots of research now showing that the more berries you eat, the more fruit you eat, then the healthier you're going to be. I don't know if you've been to Sweden or Switzerland or Norway, Finland, but the Nordic countries have shorter summers. When I was there last, I was meeting the Ralph Nader of Sweden. We communicated, and we're going to share insights because I was working on environmental programs in the United States, and I was going to take my data over and some books and documentaries, and we're going to exchange. And so during that period of time I was over there, it was just the summertime, and he said, "We have very unusual fruit." I said, "In what sense?" He said, "It's small, because we have a very short growing season. We have very harsh winters. But because of the climate here, they grow intense in their nutrient value." Ole Gederiger was his name. And so went out and he showed me some berry bushes. Now they look like strawberries and they look like raspberries, but they were tiny. When I say tiny, I mean very small. I mean, you could put like 100 in the palm of your hand. That's how small they were. They were about the size of a pea, you know, a little tiny green pea. But they were extremely sweet. And so it was just an interesting time. They say that, you know, they dry them and they eat them throughout the year as well. And we should do the same thing. Just don't get them sugar-coated and don't get them preserved with any form of chemical like sulfur. So berry dried fruits are great too. And by the way, you get a greater variety of dried than you do fresh because they're not all in season. Black currants, for example, and red currants, and mulberries. Mulberries, I get two gross a year. And mulberries grow under leaves. And sometimes if you're not paying attention, they come and they go and you're not even aware that they were growing. And so you can dry your own. I do that. Or they never kind of get to the kitchen because I go over to the animals and they love them. Oh, and so you can eat a whole bowl of berries, but they're really good for you. So all I'm saying is get as many berries into your body each day as you can, fresh or dried. So anyhow, what they found in this 8-week study is that when you have a high-fat diet, most do, high-protein diet, most do, then if you have the berries or red grape juice for 18 weeks, you end up having a metabolic change because of the berries' phytonutrients are counteracting many of the harmful effects of a high-protein, high-fat diet. And indeed, they do more than that. They actually are beneficial in what is known as spatial memory and enhanced performance. So just something to think about. One more reason to have something good in your body. And by the way, there's levels of inflammation in our brain, and that's what leads to memory loss, cognitive decline, and Alzheimer's. And by the way, Parkinson's disease, also multiple sclerosis, ALS. All this is due to inflammation, but we're not aware of the inflammation. You don't feel it, but it's going on every time you eat anything that is pro-inflammatory. Coffee, really bad for you. And also alcohol, devastating for your brain cells. It really lights up the brain in a bad way. And this also, you end up having inflammation modifying what is called interleukin 10 cytokine in the hippocampal areas of the brain. And that's what leads to the memory loss. And anyhow, what happens is that the berries have a way of tamping that down, lessening inflammation, especially in the brain, which then improves your cognitive function. Another study from Florida State University, they found that learning and memory deficits after ingestion of aspartame. Lay language, it's an artificial sweetener. It's in everything. Zero calorie drinks, generally it's aspartame. So, according to scientific reports, the offspring of male mice that consumed aspartame at levels equal to what, lower than what is considered safe for an American to consume, it causes memory deficits over the course of 16 weeks. Well, think of it this way. When was the last time you had one hamburger or a couple french fries or a little bit of extra salt on something? And that doesn't happen, does it? No. We're creatures of routine habits. We go through daily rituals. So if we have french fries, we expect to eat 22 french fries or whatever number we're getting. We expect to have a cheeseburger, a double cheeseburger. We expect to have two eggs and bacon if you're the average person. But what about our soft drinks? More things are drunk in the summer when it's hot. Just imagine down in Texas where for 28 days there was no rain. It was over 105 degrees. And that wasn't the hottest. In Phoenix, 115 degrees. You could fry an egg on the cement. So you keep the air conditioner on and keep yourself hydrated. A lot of hydration comes from soft drinks. And what's sweetening the soft drink? Aspartame. So the more you consume artificial sweetened beverages or eat artificial sweetened foods, the more likely you are to end up with memory loss and the destruction of your brain. It's that simple. And finally, from the Nationwide Children's Hospital in Ohio, a study shows nearly 300% increase in ADHD medication errors. Attention deficit hyperactivity disorder is among the most common pediatric neurodevelopmental disorders. In 2019, nearly 10% of the United States children were diagnosed as ADHD. And that's not good. And now it's increasing. But I'll set that aside. An article published in the peer-reviewed journal Pediatrics, researchers at the Center for Injury Research and Policy and Central Ohio Poison Center at Nationwide Children's Hospital investigated the characteristics and trends of out-of-hospital ADHD medication errors among people younger than 20 and reported to the U.S. Poison Centers in 20 and 21. According to the study, the annual number of ADHD-related medication errors increased 299% in 1 year. That means there was 87,691 medication errors just involving children diagnosed with ADHD and ADD. And these errors are serious, can have all kinds of serious side effects. And so just remember, try a lifestyle modification. Now, why do I say this? Because I did the study twice, a large group and a small group. Small group meaning 25 parents of ADHD and ADD diagnosed children who were on Ritalin and other medications. And what we found was when you get the sugar and caffeine, artificial stimulants, out of a child's diet, it can radically improve their performance and their behavior. If you then start to supplement with nutrients that impact their gut, with probiotics twice a day, you can improve autism and neurological neurodevelopmental problems and ADHD. If you give them nutrients like methylated B12 and folic acid and glycerol phosphocholine and acetyl-L-carnitine and other nutrients, you can make enormous difference. We had a 94% complete reversal of all symptoms of ADD and ADHD after 3 months in a large study. So I know that it works. Unfortunately, this has not been accepted yet because they haven't done the research yet. all the research goes to finding drugs to impact a ADHD or autistic or neurodevelopmental child's behavior, as if nature is so incomplete and non-trustworthy, we can never trust nature to be a part of any preventative or healing process. Wow, how far we've gone from reason. But that's what it is. I'm just giving a heads up as a parent. Pay attention to that. Oh, and by the way, you know, the idea that maybe chamomile back in the 1970s, chamomile was the herbal tea you took if you were anxious. The University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine did a study, and it indicated that chamomile has a remarkable benefit in treating anxiety. This was a randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled study, the gold standard. And they had a group of individuals suffering from anxiety and depression, and they divided them into two groups. Half the group was treated with chamomile capsules, and the other half was given a placebo. Over a period of 8 weeks, their anxiety was scored using the Hamilton Anxiety Rating. I've used the same thing. And three other tests were also used to confirm their findings. They used 220 milligrams of chamomile extract. It's not a lot. And then they used the placebo. They found 57% of the people who had anxiety had it reduced. And that was really terrific. So if you have anxiety or stress or depression, try drinking chamomile tea or try taking a 220 milligram capsule. So it's there, and that's terrific. That's the latest on health and healing. And by the way, new things happening on GaryNull.com. And I put my commentary from yesterday up there on what's happening to our society and what we should do about it. And I'm writing a major study today. Hopefully I'll have it ready within the next 2 days that I think you'll find important as well. Go to GaryNull.com and you'll see all this. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Null. This week, we're doing an entire week, each day, focusing upon questions that should be discussed in a reasonable and hopefully a more in-depth critical way of thinking about what has happened to our society. We're in a matter of months. Suddenly there is like a brush fire that becomes out of control on social media. If you don't say something right, then your whole reputation is at risk. How is this happening? How did we get here? So I've invited the adults back into the room. This is not about listening to a bunch of 17-year-olds screaming and wishing you were dead and or kissing the feet. My God, I couldn't believe what I saw. I posted it so you can see for yourself. The guys in combat boots having some white women kiss their boots. Since when is that an appropriate way to discuss a topic? That's just pure decadence. So we're going to try to show a different perspective, a different way of understanding our crisis, its causes, and its solutions. That'll be on today and tomorrow both. Then I'm going to do a two-day series on with 10 different short takes, 5 minutes each. And I'm going to start today showing you what happens that the media does not cover at all or honestly. When someone is under oath and subjected to perjury rules, and they're questioned by people who have facts in hand, the answers are frequently completely different than what you might believe. We start today on that. Because for 22 years, the House and the Senate were controlled by individuals who rejected any of these hearings. For example, where was the hearing on the fact that the entire vaccine division of the CDC had intentionally and with malice aforethought took out all references to autism and the MMR vaccine? But one person did not. He kept the data. He became a whistleblower. only when it was found that he was talking to a person, Dr. Brian Hooker, who was recording the conversations, he admitted what were criminal acts. This was given to Representative Posey out of Florida. Thousands of documents were given to Posey from the whistleblower that showed that, yes, indeed, not only did the MR vaccine cause autism and neurological disorders, but it's specifically in African-American young males, 36 months and younger, up to 325% increase. That meant that the CDC, clear up to the top, knew, along with the pharmaceutical industry, that the vaccines we were mandating were going to cause hundreds of thousands of young black males as children to become neurological challenged or hurt. Now, isn't that a crime against humanity? Where was the Black Caucus? Gone. Where were any African Americans in Congress saying, we demand, this is a racist, this is no different than the Tuskegee experiments, except far more people are involved? Gone. Covered up. Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer would not allow these hearings to exist. Because we kept asking, where's the hearings? Where are these people under oath? Never happened. So understand, some of the most important public health issues were kept out of the public arena because you only the chair, only the head of the House and the Senate are the ones who greenlight hearings and who gets to testify and who's the head of a committee. Well, now that they no longer control the House, we're hearing things that we never heard before and almost are unbelievable. You're going to hear one of those today. But then I'm going to do a whole series. That's what I do late at night. I look at the day's hearings before Congress to see if there's anything relevant to our awareness. So that's going to be a major series of programs. But for those of you who got vaccinated, and that's your freedom of choice, and I said I will support you. In fact, I did a 10.5-hour special showing you from top medical doctors and PhDs how to reverse the damages from a vaccine if you chose to. But my closest friends and own family members all were fully vaccinated. Not one person I know was not, who's close to me. Well, no, two people didn't get. And that's their right. But now the science is showing everything you were told to motivate you to get vaccinated were lies. I'll give you an example. And you won't see this anywhere else in the United States today. This is published in the peer-reviewed journal Cureus, C-U-R-E-U-S. It's a major journal. Quote, journal rejects request to retract study suggesting negative COVID vaccine effectiveness. So a group of scientists published an article showing that the vaccine had no effectiveness, zero. But then, behind the scenes, and we don't know who, they started to change their mind and say, well, we better retract it. The authors wanted to retract it. The journal did its own in-house investigation, went through a peer review system and said, there's nothing wrong in your article, meaning your article is correct. Vaccinated people compared to unvaccinated people, the vaccinated people, you got all the danger and none of the benefits. So, who was behind this request for retraction? But the journal, to its credit, did not retract it. That's only one. Now, here's something far more serious. Of all the scientists I know, and I know a lot, the MD, PhDs, top of their field, outstanding backgrounds academically and in their careers, they're now coming together by the tens of thousands, and they're sharing information under the radar, showing that we were lied to at every point, every single point. By the way, who authorized Anthony Fauci and the heads, the nine department heads of the National Institutes of Health, Health and Human Services? Who authorized them to go back into their job and give $24 billion in grants out to their friends and colleagues? How about it's just come out in a hearing, you're going to hear it this week, they had no legal authorization. That was all illegal. Whoa, you mean what Anthony Fauci and all these other people were telling us? They did not have a legal right to do it. They were no different than a common citizen. That is correct. They broke the law. Well, that opens up a whole door, doesn't it? To find out the truth, making public statements and public edicts that people had to follow mandates, that if you didn't follow, you could be arrested or go to jail, and they had no legal authorization to do it. Boy, should the personal injury attorneys pay attention to this, because that means every one of these people could be sued along with the governmental agencies because of what they did. So this is a whole new can of worms that's just opened for them. But here's something even worse. All the scientists I know say the worst is yet to come. More deaths, more injuries because of the latent period. And every time you get a vaccine, every time you get a booster, and by the way, the new boosters for the new variant, there are no human trials on this. And only a tiny, tiny, tiny little animal study. So you're flying in the dark once again. Quote, myocarditis in COVID-19 vaccines, how the CDC misled a safety signal and hid the warning. Quote, COVID-19 vaccines cause heart inflammation, U.S. authorities now acknowledge, but after being warned in early 2021 about a, quote, large number, end quote, of cases among healthy young people in Israel, after COVID-19 vaccination, authorities did not immediately alert the public while also failing to detect a safety signal that was present in the United States. Even after deaths from myocarditis, inflammation of the heart, were reported and myocarditis was designated as a likely side effect of the shots, U.S. officials kept recommending vaccination for virtually the entire population. That led to millions of young people receiving a vaccine. Many of those people suffered. And then it goes into great depth. They received the Pfizer biotech vaccine. Okay. So there was no transparency. You were lied to. We have the studies now. They're all coming out. More on that next week. But right now, I want to read you something. And if you know who wrote this, please call me. All right? Call me at 888-874-4888. And what do you think of this? All right? Quote, there is no such thing at this date of the world's history in America as an independent press. You know it. I know it. There's not one of you who dares to write your honest opinions. And if you did, you know beforehand that would never appear in print. I'm paid weekly for keeping my honest opinion out of the paper I'm connected with. Others of you are paid similar salaries for similar things. And any of you who would be so foolish as to write honest opinions would be out on the streets looking for another job. If I allowed my honest opinions to appear in one issue of my paper, before 24 hours, my occupation would be gone. The business of the journalist is to destroy the truth, to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon, and to sell his country and his race for his daily bread. You know it, I know it, and what folly it this toasting an independent press. We're the tools and vassals of rich men behind the scenes. We're the jumping jacks. They pull the strings and we dance. Our talents, our possibilities, and our lives are all the property of other men. We are intellectual prostitutes, end quote. I'm going to ask the people in studio, Dylan and Kyle, if anyone knows who wrote this, give us a call immediately. I'll come back to see if anyone is accurate. I think you'll be surprised who wrote it. All right? And then I'll tell you why this is so important, because it's so accurate. But first, we're going to go to part three of our video series. And these are measured people. We don't have any of the firebrands and radicals and the sycophants of the ideology group on. We have people who have strong backgrounds in their fields who are giving us their opinions, their insights, and their research on the woke culture and all of its different manifestations. Now we'll go to the clip.
My name is Corey Drayton. I'm a motion picture cinematographer and have been for almost 20 years now, actually a little more than 20 years. I'm in the process of writing a memoir. I just went through terminal cancer. I spent the last 2 years in radiation and chemotherapy, basically just battling for my life. And I wanted to write a memoir about that experience because I found the experience of surviving cancer to be transcendental in a certain sense. It really forces you to stop, assess your life, assess what you've been doing, what your values are, and you go inside and you face your demons.
I endured months of chemo and radiation. Living with terminal illness put the afterburners on, compelled me to make the most of whatever time I had left and leave something behind if I didn't survive. We tend to think of cancer as a runaway replication of cells, the body copying itself into oblivion. Yet it served me more to think of cancer as possessing a will of its own, a demonic force invading the nation of my body, turning my body's own processes against itself. Cancer easily spreads from one part of the body to another, and when it does, it usually kills the host. I was at stage 4 terminal, that had grown beyond the initial tumor, metastasized, invaded my lymphatic system, and ran amok in my bloodstream. It could turn up anywhere in my body at any time, and I lived in daily terror, the thought of my own cells turning against me, like sleeper cells, wreaking havoc, shutting down the systems of my body one by one in ultimate self-interest. My experience with cancer is akin to witnessing the spread of woke ideology. This ideology infects people, corrodes our institutions, news media, politicians, and even our ability to speak to one another. Its spread is being accelerated by my own industry, who market it as a timely movement to help the oppressed. Those who subscribe to it generally have good intentions, believing they're in a cosmic battle of good versus evil, that they must eradicate that evil and bring about justice on Earth.
You put your hands on me and I'll beat the hell out of you!
Fuck white America!
Today, the city burns! Today, we get justice!
Unfortunately, a large number of people, believing they're acting in the name of justice, including social justice, seem to think that you can play groups of people against other groups in order to win. So, for instance, they claim, they actually speak and act as though the way to solve any remaining issues of racial injustice is to defame and insult all white people. These are people who seem to believe that if there are remaining ceilings preventing women from getting to certain positions in society, they should insult and speak in a derogatory manner about all men. As if this society does have any remaining problems about homosexuality, they should get through that by insulting all heterosexuals. This isn't a solution for justice, it's a solution for endless ongoing division.
Cancer has one design: to co-opt the systems of the body in order to serve itself. The fight to survive slowly consumed my every waking moment and even took over my entire identity. In a similar way, woke ideology doesn't allow people to think freely. It is a totalitarian thought system that doesn't permit deviation. Every concept must be transformed and everything one thinks about the world must be understood through the lens of woke social justice. Just as cancer cells devour the body, woke justice corrodes one's ability to think objectively, consumes people's identities, and creates chaos and destruction in its path.
If you show up as an authentic individual in any way, shape, or form where the woke ideology holds sway, well, we will take away your ability to support yourself, we'll take away your ability to eat, we'll take away your ability to own anything. It's deeply dystopian.
It's lazy to just like set somebody off and say, I don't care about their life anymore and I don't want this person to have any way back ever. If that's the modus operandi you're going to live by, you better be careful, because absolutely this will come for you and you've set it up.
I have actually been fired. I've been replaced for not towing the line. There was one instance in particular actually related to Black Lives Matter when there was a producer. We were having a production meeting. I'd just been hired on to a show as its DP. And this person, they kept mentioning Black Lives Matter and then looking over at me for validation. And I was just completely gray rock, stone-faced, not giving them anything. And they noticed that in the meeting, so they took me aside and they asked me later on, you know, well, did that bother you? And I said, yeah, just so you know, I don't support Black Lives Matter. I went home, didn't think much of it. Next morning, I got a call from, the production team saying that I was off the show. I always bristle a little bit when people, they say something like, oh, I support Black Lives Matter as a way to score points with me. I always point out to them, I said, well, what makes you think that I agree with Black Lives Matter? You know, should you not take me as an individual and ask me for my opinion? When I encounter someone who is a proponent of Black Lives Matter and it comes up in conversation, I assume that they are a good person and they feel that they are doing the right thing. They feel that they're supporting an organization that is supposed to be helping people, but they just haven't done the research to really understand the broader implications of a lot of what the Black Lives Matter movement stands for and is involved with. Black Lives Matter are only interested in the kind of blackness that they can exploit through the standpoint of victimhood. And I think that's extraordinarily unhealthy. Certainly, if black lives actually did matter to BLM, they would be talking about the black-on-black crime rates. They would be talking about the dissolution and destruction of black families. They don't talk about those things at all.
Where's the racist cops now? Black lives matter!
Woke ideology makes people believe that our entire society is corrupt and needs to be overthrown because of the false assertion that all inequities stem from systemic racism, sexism, and powerful oppressive elites. This belief blinds the woke and causes them to think that there are only two options: support their righteous cause or join the forces of evil and become an enemy to be destroyed.
If it doesn't cool down, I mean, we will see more murder in the street. And I would hope that people wouldn't say, well, my movement says that that's okay.
I am not sad that a fucking fascist died tonight.
I believe anybody that does that contains the seeds of their own destruction.
The all-encompassing nature of woke ideology is a problem so pervasive that it exists in nearly every corner of our society, far beyond its manifestations in our streets. It is now found in private and public sectors, where in diversity training, based on the extremely divisive critical race theory, is mandatory. And schools even teach children they are evil if they're white, or a doomed victim if they're black. It has also taken over the film industry, which has been rather difficult for me to navigate.
I think that part of how I've contributed to the problem is that I haven't felt empowered to speak up. I haven't said to these people, hey, you know, just so you know, you calling me and you saying we want a diverse crew, so we'd love to bring you on as a DP, I find that really demeaning.
I didn't speak up for the longest time, and I internalized the stress, the futility, and the hopelessness I was feeling, which was devastating to my immune system and may have even led to me developing cancer. In order to beat cancer, it has taken every ounce of willpower to accept and endure radiation and chemo, but moreover to choose to believe I have meaning and a purpose to fight for. Sometimes the only way to get rid of cancer is to cut it out, and the only way to stop the corrosive spread of woke ideology and keep it from eating away at every aspect of our society is to make the necessary incisions and to be chemotherapy. Create an environment in which the cancer cannot thrive. Speak up when you see it and point out its lies. The truth is that the West has made progress and continues to do so in regards to race relations, overcoming sexism, criminal justice reform, and more. The truth is that unequal outcomes aren't bad in and of themselves and generally reflect the natural outcomes of a competitive and productive society. A society that does care about its weak and vulnerable, as is seen in many social programs that help marginalized people in the public and private spheres alike. Every time we hear unfounded claims made to push the woke narrative, we must use truth and reason to push back. Every time someone is unfairly attacked by woke mobs, we must support them. The only way through this adversity is to shine the light of truth and reason on this problem and support one another as we overcome it.
People can do anything. People can transcend anything. And I think it's really important to let the ideologies go and just get back to the simple business of being human beings again. That's all.
Okay, that's one voice. That's an African-American filmmaker who found that his own career was challenged simply by offering a question of whether he should support Black Lives Matter or not. Now, each person's right to make the choices they want. But should we punish people if we feel they haven't made the choice we expected them or demanded they make? And that's where we're at today. I believe we have someone on the line from New York. Could you please give us your name? You say you have an answer to the question of who wrote the comment I offered at the beginning of the program.
Jack Anderson?
No, but good guess, because if you knew Jack Anderson, you knew that he was probably, along with Lowell Thomas, someone that the people respected and brought information. But Jack Anderson was a whistleblower. He got inside of Washington, and he told the truth, and he told the stories. So, no, the person, but thank you. I appreciate that thought.
Malcolm X? That's the only one I can think of. Else.
No, the person who said the following, I'll just quote the last paragraph. He said, quote, "We are the tools and the vassals of rich men behind the scenes. We are the jumping jacks. They pull our strings and we dance. Our talents, our possibilities, and our lives are all the property of other men. We are intellectual prostitutes." Well, I've interviewed prostitutes, and I would challenge them on that because I don't think a lot of journalists have the intelligence of prostitutes. It was John Swinton, S-W-I-N-T-O-N. He was the chief of staff at the New York Times. I said the chief of staff at the New York Times in 1880.
Wow.
1880. So good for him and good for any journalist who has the courage to tell the truth. Oh, I forgot. We've had journalists tell the truth at the New York Times, and they were excoriated and excommunicated. Chris Hedges is one. Matt Taibbi from Rolling Stone is another. And then we have a long list. So good for them. The doors of their liberal democratic colleagues who are faux liberals, real liberals, support freedom of speech. Real liberals support open and honest debate. Real liberals are anti-war. The current so-called liberals, and they're not real liberals, not for those of us who know what a real liberal is, they are all behind the wars. They're behind Saudi Arabia, they're behind the destruction of the innocent people in Yemen. They're behind the slaughter of people in Ukraine and the corruption in Ukraine. So know who's benefiting from any conflict. Then you'll see what side of an issue you should take. Thank you very much. And in line with that, I'm not going to go to our second clip. I'm going to hold that for tomorrow. This is from an anonymous person who merely states at the end of his Substack that he works within the intellectual professional community in Great Britain. And Lisa is his pseudonym here. But listen to what he has to say and see whether you find reasonable statements or unreasonable. It's your choice. I'm merely providing it to you. It's an article entitled "Orwell Would Loathe Today's Left." Quote, "He slammed the bourgeois intellectuals of his day for their intolerance and insularity." Sound familiar? I recently reread George Orwell's 1941 essay, The Lion and the Unicorn, and I was taken by his description of the bourgeois, the left-leaning intelligentsia of his time. They lived in the shallowness of ideas. He writes, "Severed from the common culture and life experiences of the working class, they spend most of their time bickering with their chief enemy, the equally bourgeois blimps, archetypal, red-faced imperialist. Though they despise each other, both the bourgeois intelligentsia and the blimps are united in their mutual disdain for the working class." Orwell, perhaps England's greatest ever political writer, notes how the bourgeois left intelligentsia use a lot of words to intellectualize issues without understanding them. He saw that they frequently blimp-baited without engaging with the real challenges people face. And he saw that they were only prepared to discuss issues raised in a few select publications, mainly the New Statesman and News Chronicles back then, which they also happened to edit, read, and write for. I was struck by how well this description of the bourgeois left intelligentsia fits today's middle-class lefties. This was brought home recently by the Twitter's left response to the cancellation of Roisin Murphy, a wonderful soulful singer who has been monstered in recent weeks for expressing her reservation about children being given puberty blockers. Venues promptly canceled her gigs, and her record company halted promotion of her new album, Hit Parade. Suzanne Moore, a former Guardian writer, now limited in where she can write because of her gender-critical views, asked why no music journalists were willing to defend Murphy. After all, this is an extremely talented musician being punished merely for expressing her views. The response from wealthy left-wingers was all too redolent of Orwell's bourgeois lefties. Musician Billy Bragg, known for his fierce disagreements with gender-critical feminists, quickly responded on Twitter. He said that music journalists don't want to write for The Spectator, The Telegraph, or The Daily Mail, share bylines with Richard Littlejohn, Nick Timothy, and Douglas Murray, or, quote, drift rightward on a sea of spite. All the elements of Orwell's bourgeois left intelligentsia were on display in Bragg's response to Moore's question. There was the knee-jerk baiting of one's opponents, the refusal to discuss things beyond a few select middle-class publications like The Guardian, and the sheer out-of-touchness. After all, what Murphy said was hardly extremist. It's an opinion a lot of people share, including leading National Health Services pediatricians. This captures the state of the bourgeois left today. They have little more than the Daily Mail bashing to sustain their illusions of radicalism. They are incapable of engaging in the complex debates that actually concern the British public, and yes, the question of giving puberty blockers to kids really does concern the public. Instead, today's bourgeois left retreats into the narrow, intellectually conformist worlds of academia and publishing, and they try to shut down debates they feel uncomfortable with. Those of us who want to engage in today's difficult debates, including with people we disagree with, are banished to what the bourgeois left calls the right-wing press. This allows left-wingers to satisfy themselves that our arguments and our words can be ignored by association. We are no longer legitimate. Our arguments can be discounted and our views kept out of the safe middle-class publications. These lefties feel no need to speak to a wider audience because, as they see it, that wider audience is simply wrong. I think Orwell would see all of this for what it is, a charade. He would certainly know that England's working classes are still the ones doing the hard work, and that any genuine radical politics lies in their hands. If the bourgeois leftists don't want the dirty to dirty their hands by leaving their comfortable Twitter bubble, it is no great loss. They won't be missed. End quote. If you have a thought on this, call us. I'd like to hear your opinion. 888-874-4888. I've written over 54 commentaries and essays challenging critical race theory as the newest form of racism and the woke generation, cancel culture, cancel people that you've never met, probably have never read their work, but simply they're not supporting you in your diatribes. How does that expand our capacity to understand all sides of an issue? Oh, but we don't want all sides of an issue. Remember when George Bush and the Republicans controlling Congress didn't want to hear that we shouldn't be going into Iraq, didn't want to hear that the entire 9/11 commission was a fraud? Now that I can prove and have, with documents and details and experts from the Architects and Engineers Committee, with over 1,200 of them, and the people they chose not to allow in because they heard bombs going off in the basement, not a few, hundreds. So none of them were allowed to speak. Their conclusions were no better than the Warren Commission's fairy tale conclusions. Well, now a Secret Service agent is now telling us, after all these decades, shame on him, there was another bullet, and he put it on the stretcher. Oh, well, what happened? That would mean if there was another bullet, then there was another shooter. Why did you wait this long? And think of all the lies that have been told to justify the conspiracy to kill Kennedy. But they did this also with Bobby Kennedy. They lost. How do you lose a door? Well, they had to lose the door. That's the corrupt Los Angeles Police Department. And that's because there were more bullets in the door than one person and different calibers that shot Kennedy, Sirhan Sirhan. So you see, we're lied to all the time. And who controls the media controls the narrative. But the media is almost universally now biased and wrong on almost everything it does. So good for the 1880 column, and good for the people speaking up, knowing that they very well may be canceled. Mind you, I played Neil Oliver repeatedly. He is a scholar. In fact, he was recently, I think it was 3 years ago, he was made a senior fellow in one of the most prestigious scientific and philosophical organizations in the world, the Royal Academy. Well, after they saw him talk about the power of the deep state, they sent him a letter and said, your opinions are different with our opinion. So he resigned. I have that clip, a three-minute clip, that he's happy. He doesn't want to be associated with people who accept lies and distortions of the truth, but stay in the safety of the consensus because they are the only ones rewarded. Speak against someone who's in power, and suddenly you have no power. And this other concept is that look at what the publications are doing to anyone who is a card-carrying, hard-ass Democrat liberal on Keith Olbermann. I don't know how anybody could watch Keith Olbermann. Whoa. And all the other people show. Every night, one of these people were on there. Well, why don't you have on Dr. Naomi Wolf, the world's leading feminist on women's health issues for the last 15 years of her 35-year career? What about Chris Hedges? Is he so inarticulate and so incapable of reason and research you don't want him on? Now, how about Abby Martin, one of the few journalists who went to live in Israel, in the West Bank, in Gaza, was there when they were being shot, unarmed, shot. And yet the American media had to report what they were told to report by the deep state, but not the truth. She was there to tell you the truth. Oh, the moment she started bringing out a documentary on what she saw firsthand, we got to see the truth. Well, they went after her, tooth and nail. What about Max Blumenthal? What about Aaron Monte, who's on the Ukrainian hit list? And they have a list of people they want to kill. What about Jimmy Dore? What about the people telling you the truth? They've been excommunicated from the left, even though they are authentic liberals, not the faux liberals that we see today. And then the faux liberals say, oh, you're on Tucker Carlson. You really and have always been a right-wing conservative. No, no. They've debated him, but he provided a form for them. Where's your form? New York Times, when did you ever allow any of these people to come on there and talk about what was wrong with COVID? Why didn't you invite Dr. Malone to come on? You've pillared him on the front page, made him one of the 12 disciples of misinformation on COVID. Why didn't you invite him on to debate you? Or get a group of doctors, get 100 doctors and scientists, and he still would have won because truth on the side of one is still a majority to those of us who still have the capacity for critical thinking. So you see the game they play, and the average person rolls up their arm and says, can I have another injection, please? That's where we're at today. I want to say goodbye to WBI's audience because they're going to go to the news. I'm continuing on to the top of the hour. And we're going to play that clip now. This is a clip, and listen carefully to this clip because you will not hear any of this reported in the media. But because it was under oath and it was an official hearing, you're going to see the Undersecretary of the Attorney General's Office being grilled on how They have gone about making an innocent civilian who goes to a school board meeting an enemy combatant, in their opinion, a domestic terrorist. And they brought in the national security state and gave them 13 rules of how you can attack individual citizens. And yet they say they're not a fascist state. Oh, they long ago were a fascist state. Let's hear what he has to say.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Prior to 2016 and 2017, the worst known instance of abuse of power by an administration was Richard Nixon's abuse of his administration to target his political enemies. By any measure, what the Obama-Biden administration did in 2016 and 2017 makes everything Richard Nixon even contemplated pale in comparison. And Richard Nixon rightfully faced impeachment and ultimately resigned as a consequence of his misconduct. The evidence that has been made public has made clear that the Obama administration targeted his political opponents, targeted President Trump and his campaign, unleashed, weaponized, and politicized the Department of Justice, the FBI, and the intelligence community, and that the decision-making to do so went right up to the very top. We know that on January 4th, 2017, the FBI concluded in a document that has just been released that General Michael Flynn was, quote, no longer a viable candidate to be part of this larger case. Their investigation did not yield any information on which to predicate further investigative efforts. The FBI is closing this investigation. That was January 4th, 2017. The next day, James Comey, the director of the FBI, is sitting in the Oval Office with Barack Obama, with Joe Biden, and James Comey, according to a memo from Susan Rice, one of the most remarkable CYA memos written in Washington, written on her last day in office, an email to herself saying, by the way, this investigation into the national security advisor coming in to the new office, the president has said, do it, quote, by the book. She says by the book three times. James Comey tells the president, we're investigating Michael Flynn by the book. Well, unless the book is Richard Nixon's Watergate, the day before the FBI said they were closing the investigation, and there's James Comey telling Barack Obama, we're going after General Flynn, a decorated three-star general, the incoming national security advisor of the president, with Joe Biden sitting right there nodding along. Joe Biden himself personally unmasks Michael Flynn's name. That's the world you came into, Mr. Rosenstein. That's the Department of Justice you came into, where it had been corrupted and politicized. You've read the Inspector General report, Mr. Rosenstein?
I've read most of it, yes, sir.
You've read the 17 repeated material misstatements documented within the Inspector General report?
I have read that, yes, sir.
You're aware one of those is a lawyer fraudulently altering an email, creating counterfeit evidence that became the predicate for a sworn statement in the FISA court.
That is in the Inspector General's report. Yes, sir.
Are you aware?
Okay. We're out of time, but you can hear more of that, all of it. And I have a whole bunch of these on different topics to show you how utterly, completely corrupt every agency government is. And the media doesn't cover any of this. Or if it should have to cover it, it's biased in its coverage. So we're going to show you the truth in an upcoming series. Thank you all for listening and watching, and have a nice day.